Wrestling to the Max, Monday Night Raw, Review.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling to the Max, the Raw review for June 5th, 2017. And I am Gary Vaughn, and here is our host, Mr. Paul Leeser.
Heyo.
And Paul, the one thing we need to let everybody know before we jump into this episode of Raw is the fact that you can find us on W2Mnet.com. I know we tell you every week, basically, but that's the way we make sure if you're a new listener, that's what you go find us. But plus also, if you're hearing us right now and maybe you found us online or maybe even on YouTube, if you want to stream our podcast every week, the place that you go to do that is by subscribing at Wrestling to the Max. And of course, you can do that on Apple Podcast or any place that you go find podcasts. And of course, if you want to get everything that W2Mnet.com has to offer, go subscribe to the W2M Network. That's right. That gives you not only us, but all our great friends and all the other great wrestling podcasts that our family has to offer you guys. So, just a quick plug there to let you guys know what's going on. This week, of course, you know, we are talking post-Extreme Rules. That's what's going on in this Raw, and a lot of recapping and a lot of new directions for everything. So we're going to be talking about that, Paul, and let's go ahead and get into that.
Yeah, let's do that, because despite the Fatal 5-Way going down at Extreme Rules, which was a phenomenal match, those guys still have beef with each other, and they opened the show with Bray Wyatt coming out to talk about how he could have been the one to kill the Beast and save everybody from him, but they all turned on him, everybody's betrayed him, but he's still Bray Wyatt, he's still a god, and he's looking for revenge against everybody who's, you know, from the match, essentially. So Reigns comes out and cuts a very what Roman Reigns should be promo of, look, this is my yard, and you're not going to be here to mess with me, and then just straight up attacks him, and that leads us into our first match of Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt, which Roman comes out on top of after 20 minutes. This got a lot of time, but this was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and, you know, really, you know, here's the thing. If you listen to the Extreme Rules podcast review that we did last night, you hear me and Sean really kind of going back and forth with this whole process of who is the guy that kind of lost out. And really, honestly, the guy that was kind of left in the cold, besides having a great tag with, in a way, a partner involved in that five-way with Samoa Joe, but yet Bray Wyatt was kind of the lost dog, kind of the guy that left out in the cold a little bit there, even though he was very impressive. I think this situation kind of brings him back to the forefront. He gets in there. Yeah, sure. You know, you have Roman Reigns kind of punk him out a little bit. And at first, I was terrified, Paul, that, you know, when he got punched in the face and I thought he was going to walk up the ramp and leave. Mm-hmm. I got terrified that we were going to see a Braun Strowman kind of thing happen. But that was not the case. We had a decent match here. I think both guys put a pretty good showing in here. And Bray Wyatt may not come out of this smelling like roses, but he sure does come out of this feeling important. And that's a really good. I still am not sold. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not sold that they've got him going in the right direction completely. But it's better than having him lose in 5 minutes to, you know, the one guy that they all love, and that's Roman Reigns. I think this is good for Bray Wyatt. I think this works great for Roman Reigns because he not only has a good showing here, but he still is victorious after a battle against a guy that I think really should be able to stand toe-to-toe to him. So I don't have any complaints here, Paul. I mean, I think it was good. You know, I'm always going to want high hopes and great things for Bray Wyatt, but this is better than them just dogging him out and putting him out in 5 minutes.
Yeah, on the plus side, he does look competitive here against Roman Reigns, who we all know is sort of de facto number one guy on Raw at this point, I think, as far as WWE is concerned. And you obviously have Bray stuck in a very open-ended thing where they can decide to use him here or there or wherever and not really have to do a whole lot with him as far as pushing him towards a certain direction. So almost like they're trying to cool him off even more from where he was post-Randy now. So I'm not a huge fan of this direction for him, but I don't know if they have anything for him to do anymore just because I don't know if they know what to do with him anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point here. I look at it maybe as that cool off is a time to retool, you know, and to back him off. I mean, I could be completely wrong, but I look at this as a situation where you go forward and you keep having him lose. You're doing no good. You're on a treadmill, and you're going nowhere, really. You're just moving. I think if you do cool him off, you kind of put him in the background a little bit. Even though he's still competitive, like in this match, he still looks good. I think that you can find another feud, another matchup down the road that does work, and maybe you have a better situation for him. But you're right. Right now, it's not exactly roses and beautiful rainbows for this guy. This guy, really, honestly, his future is kind of bleak at the moment because we don't have a direction for him. So hopefully that time is taken to retool. I hope it's not taken for them to forget about him.
Yeah, I mean, we're just going to have to wait and see, but they kind of do like to leave guys out in the cold for a while sometimes, so hopefully this is not that. First off, Mysterious by his absence, and somebody who we're not going to talk about that wasn't that Fatal 5-Way is Finn Balor. He's not on this show, but he is the one that sort of took the pinfall and everything. Like, he did get choked out, so I like that idea of them selling that injury there, which they're going to do a lot of for a lot of the guys who lost yesterday. But let's talk about my absolute favorite part of the show, and that's Samoa Joe's promo. He comes out and says that he's going to be the guy to beat Lesnar because he's not afraid of him. He's not capable of fear, and he even admits that he envies Lesnar because of his schedule, because he's got Paul Heyman, who he wants as his advocate, to go negotiate all the contracts and run errands for him, and Brock's aura is essentially about how, you know, just legitimately scary that guy is. Joe wants all of that. And he continues to go on about this until Paul Heyman comes out and says, you know, I was out here a couple weeks ago saying that Finn Balor was who I wanted to win, who I thought was going to win, and that was the dream scenario because Finn has the built-in story and we could have made so much money. But you, Joe, you are the worst case scenario because you are a frightening human being. You're scary. You're not afraid of Brock. And Brock has the ability to sort of tell Paul Heyman that, look, everything's going to be all right no matter how big and bad this guy I'm looking up with, except you. I don't think he's going to be able to keep my mind safe from thinking that you're going to beat him, because no matter what, you're going to take a piece from him. And this eventually leads into Heyman essentially wishing Joe luck. Samoa Joe, however, is intent on sending a message, and he backs Paul up into a corner. And this is brilliant. The camera closes up on him, and he tells Paul Heyman exactly what he's going to do to him, and he wants him to go tell Brock Lesnar what the feeling is like. And then he straight up chokes Paul Heyman out with the Kikina Clutch, and just goes freaking psycho on him afterwards, too, screaming, you tell this to Lesnar, and all that good stuff. It's one of those star-making moments that if you don't watch anything else from this show, you definitely need to go watch this.
In fact, you know, if anybody gets a chance to, you know, really watch this over again, you really understand that, man, they just did wonders with Samoa Joe in just one segment. And the reason I say that is they did not only put him over at the pay-per-view and had him be that number one contender, but he stands tall. You very much believe everything that he's saying. And that's what Samoa Joe does. It's so great to see him able to do this on a Monday Night Raw. I kept thinking to myself, man, it's so silly that this guy hasn't been doing this for longer on Monday Night Raw. We saw him on Impact and Ring of Honor and other places. This is a long time coming, and I'm so happy people are getting a chance to see this guy and how just awesome he is on the mic and in his athletic work and all that. And just this promo alone, you're right, Paul. This is one of those moments where I think if you didn't know who Samoa Joe is, you know now. Mm-hmm. And that was intense. I mean, very, very awesome. I love this. You know, you can't touch Brock Lesnar because Brock Lesnar never shows up. But if you're going to send a message, you got to do it through Paul Heyman. And Samoa Joe is not afraid to do that. And Paul Heyman learned that really quickly. I loved it so much, I even stuck it on our intro for our regular episode of Wrestling to the Max Part 1 this week. So go check that out. You'll hear it again. Really cool. But, I mean, I think Paul, I mean, for the most part, this guy is going to go up against one of the biggest stars in WWE, even though we don't see him a lot, in Brock Lesnar. People pay tickets to go see Brock Lesnar. But I think now, with this kind of stuff going on and the way that they are getting Joe on this path of destruction, mm-hmm. it would not shock me if people aren't paying to see Samoa Joe pretty soon.
This automatically got me as hyped as I've been for a Brock Lesnar match, maybe since he came back. I've been into a lot of his matches, but I don't think they've ever had a segment like this that really just got you automatically intrigued to want to see the fight tomorrow on SmackDown, hell be damned with the brand split, you know. So I think a lot of props to Samoa Joe here, Paul Heyman, everybody involved with this segment. This was a masterful performance.
Yeah, definitely. And you got the right guy to tango with Samoa Joe and Paul Heyman, because he sold it. Wow. Very well done. I mean, my God. But, you know, the one thing I will say, too, is the name of the pay-per-view is not so great. Great Balls of Fire, right? And that's something that I think kind of made this pay-per-view look very weak. But this match alone immediately made me forget about caring about the title of the pay-per-view. I immediately say, you can call it Tootsie Rolls and Gumdrops, and I'd still watch it, because this match is going to be so awesome. So great job tonight on Raw with this segment with Joe.
But we were not finished with Joe or Paul Heyman. After the segment, Kurt Angle confronts Joe about what he did, and Joe says that he's going to take out anybody who gets in his way on his road to getting to Brock Lesnar. That's when Seth Rollins shows up and says he wants a piece of Joe. And they make a match, which will be your main event, which we'll talk about here in just a hot second, because we do get a segment with Paul Heyman in the trainer's room, essentially, and Brock Lesnar calls him on his phone, and he tells Brock over the phone that he needs to make Joe afraid of him, be here next week on Raw to do that, and then they're going to unleash Brock on what sounds like just the entire show. So confirmed, Brock Lesnar will be on Raw next week. That should be a huge to do. And then let's go ahead and dive in. Samoa Joe and Seth Rollins go one-on-one. They get about 15 minutes. Samoa Joe wins by submission after, the Wyatt package hits and the lights go out, which distracts Seth for Joe to lock in the Kikina clutch. And, Rollins once again passes out in it. So over a period of 2 days, the clutch has choked out three people. Samoa Joe won the number one contendership, and even though it's tainted, he did get his win back from Seth Rollins. Joe looks really awesome at the end of this evening, if you ask me. And Seth, I think, did a good job in the match with Joe, too.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, really quickly, great job with them using Paul Heyman once again in this show to kind of sneakily get you excited about next week's Raw. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to, next week, blah, blah, blah. No, it's just one phone call. You talked and you speak the name Brock Lesnar being on Raw. There you go. People are already wanting to tune in for that Raw, and I really am too now. You know, and the next thing about this whole Samoa Joe and Seth Rollins thing, it makes sense. I'm very happy they had the match here. The most interesting thing I think about it is the way that this whole thing turned around, because, you know, Samoa Joe did control a lot of this match, and then Seth Rollins kind of started to get things going on his side until that whole Wyatt package hit. And now Bray is once again tied up with Samoa Joe. Even if Samoa Joe didn't ask him to, it's still that whole thing of Bray hanging on to Joe and saying, hey, we're good for each other, in a subtle sense. And I don't know if that's really going to take place or how they're going to play that, but in my mind, it's a way for Bray to say, hey, you know, I notice how dominant we are. Maybe we can work some things out to help each other. So just a little subtle thing there. But, you know, I think this win, like you said, good for Samoa Joe. Gets his win again against Seth Rollins. And now you have Joe coming out of this weekend looking hot as ever. just it's wonders of how much that they really pushed this guy in just one weekend.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that pretty much ties up all your main event stuff. So let's talk about my other favorite part of the show, and that's Dean Ambrose and The Miz once again, seemingly still being in a feud together. First up, we have the Drifter do his little stick and sing a song, which he's interrupted by Dean. Dean comes into the ring and looks like he's going to talk to him a little bit, but instead just attacks him and tosses him out of the ring. He wants The Miz tonight in a rematch for the Intercontinental Championship. The Miz appears on screen and says, "We can't do that because I'm going to be celebrating my title win from yesterday and my Intercontinental title comeback tour, and, you know, it's just not going to happen." So he disappears from the screen. The Drifter attacks Dean from behind and lays him out with his neck breaker thing, which is apparently called the Encore, which is odd name for a Drifter submission or finisher move. But anyways, Dean eventually gets backstage. He runs into Angle. He wants his rematch. Kurt says, "You'll get it, but it won't be tonight because, you know, of Miz having a celebration," and he doesn't want to piss Maryse off because she planned it all and he doesn't want to deal with that. So, very fair reasoning there. And so Kurt decides that if you're going to be as your usual Dean Ambrose self, maybe you should just take the night off. Dean refuses, so Kurt forces him to leave the building.
Yeah, I mean, this is something where they get, you know, the guy that they somehow, some way have to get on the show no matter what, and the Drifter on the show. They do that, and they use Dean Ambrose, and that's kind of a normal thing now. So all that worked out well. I think this is something we've seen quite a bit in multiple situations, but it's still okay. I didn't have a problem with it per se. Makes sense. I mean, that's really all, because we've seen this stuff before, right? You know, distraction, video package, and, oh, man, and Elias Samson attacks him. Big surprise. I don't have a problem with it. I'm just saying that there's nothing really new in this. But having Ambrose leave, you start to lead to another scenario. It's, hey, this is predictable. We've seen this before. So a guy gets kicked out of building. He sneaks back in and all that. So now you have that in your mind. That's why I love the next part. So I'll let you go to the next part.
Yeah, so we get another segment, much like last week on Raw, where we have Kurt Angle come out to the commentary table and pull Corey Graves aside and showing him something on his phone. And we still don't know what the heck this is about. As Kurt blows off the reporter who tries to get a word with him, which allows Dean to sneak back into the building. And this leads us to our Miz celebration. Maryse brings him on down. He gets a "You Deserve It" chant. He distinctly rubs that right back in the fans' faces because the Miz is awesome. And, you know, talks about how lovely a celebration this is. And there's a dancing bear in the ring with a big sign that says congratulations, and he really likes the bear because he thinks he can make a hashtag out of it. And Maryse reveals that she didn't hire the bear, and Miz didn't hire the bear. So they kind of go back and forth with that a little bit before Miz jumps the bear. And it turns out it's just some dude when everybody's thinking it's Dean Ambrose. And then this giant present gets rolled down to the ring, and Miz rolls the outside and pulls a chair from ringside and attacks the present because he thinks Dean's in there. And Maryse freaks out. She tries to stop him. And Mike, you know, the Miz just keeps going way too long, in my opinion here. But it's pretty funny. And it turns out that Miz destroyed this grandfather clock that Maryse got him because they're both timeless. And she gets all pissed off and leave. And Miz hops back into the ring trying to apologize. And apparently being in the ring and having height makes your apology more something for Miz, I guess. Because I don't know why he had to roll back in there. But then Ambrose rolls back into the ring. He's a cameraman the entire time and lays the Miz out with dirty deeds, takes a bottle of champagne, and has a good chug from it as he walks out.
Yeah, I'm not much of a champagne fan, so I don't know how he did that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, trust me, every year I drink it for New Year's, and I'm just like, ugh, why do I even do this to myself? But anyway, I'm sorry, I should have talked about this, but it was more appropriate. Elias Samson, the Drifter, I just got to say, they're consistently trying to get him on TV. They're consistently, really honestly, trying to get him to win some way, somehow, and they're doing it. So I know that's not important, but I just want to say, notice something. they consistently make that happen. So they're going to do something with him. I don't know what, but just make sure you pay attention to him because they're obviously on him in a good way. Don't know why, but they are. But okay, so let's talk about this. And I didn't want to give away too much earlier. That's why I didn't really give a lot more information on kind of the things I was thinking on this. But I really, really love this segment too. I think that they did a great job here. This celebration looked great. It looked like The Miz. I mean, The Miz is on key like always, right? I mean, you like you pointed out, Paul, makes fun of the crowd who are cheering for him. I mean, they're like, you deserve it. And he's like, yeah, you say that about everybody who wins a title. Shut up. And so it's just, man, he's gold on the mic. That's why I love The Miz. And in this whole scenario, he gets to be where he is in the situation of, oh, no, I got to be paranoid because guess what? Just like all you fans think, I think the same thing. This guy is just going to come back in the arena. He's going to come down the aisle. He's going to sneak in somehow. I've got to be paranoid. I've got to know that Dean Ambrose is just right around the corner. And that paranoia leads him to attacking an innocent person in a bear costume, to destroying the gift that Marie spent all this money on and time, pissing her off. I just extremely love it. Yeah, sure, some of it took a little while, and it's kind of maybe went a little longer than it needed to, but at the same time, it was so enjoyable. And honestly, Paul, I didn't really see the cameraman thing coming. I didn't even think about it. That's what I love. It's not the same old same, right? It's not he's out there with some popcorn. We've seen Ambrose do that. Or, you know, he's sitting at a ringside or, you know, just hiding somewhere. No, he was the cameraman. And that was such a smart thing to do. And I think that made it mean even so much more. Ambrose gets to stand tall and just, you know, really piss The Miz off after his, you know, big celebration. So I honestly was a big fan of this. I think it worked out well. And here's another thing, Paul, starting not to get bored of Dean Ambrose. I think this is actually working in his favor. I think he's kind of getting a rub from this situation in a positive way compared to what we've seen in the past.
I really enjoyed this segment a whole lot too, for all the reasons you just said. It's so, so rare when WWE lets their guys look like they're actually intelligent, and Miz obviously has watched a lot of, you know, wrestling in the past, so, you know, the obvious fakes are there, and he goes for them, and, you know, the misdirection. It's just a really nice little added-on little bit of the segment there, and then having Dean turn out to be the cameraman, which is, like, the last, like, real, you know, obvious thing that somebody turns out to be during the segments. You know, I mean, the crowd popped for him pretty good. And we should, I mean, the crowd was really awesome the entire night, too. But they loved this. They loved Joe. The big stuff that you're supposed to care about on these shows, this live crowd cared about. And that was really nice, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really made everything so much more better. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated the crowd. I mean, they really got you into it as the show progressed. But, you know, once again, I think The Miz knocks it out of the ballpark. And I think even Ambrose really did a good job in his part as well. I don't want to miss him and say, oh, it was just all Miz. No, I think Ambrose actually played this pretty smart. He wasn't too goofy. He was just, I'm going to kill this guy. And that's right. The Ambrose I like. I love that Ambrose. Not so much on the Ambrose of carrying a potted plant around and being, I'm a lunatic. No, I mean, that stuff is funny. It's okay when it has its time and place. But this, you know, Ambrose that is a real lunatic is not playing around. He's just out there to kill you. That's what I love about this. And I think both did an excellent job.
I mean, we shouldn't speak ill of Mitch, Gary. Like, he's just...
No,
Let's leave the memories alone.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Rest in peace, Mitch. We apologize.
We miss you. Let's talk about this other thing that has continuously played out across Raw, and that's the Who's Attacking Enzo and Cass thing. So they get interviewed earlier in the night. Enzo says he still doesn't have a clue on who's attacking him. Big Cass says he's insulted that some people think it's him, and lets Enzo know that he's always going to have his back, including in their match tonight, because they'll be taking on Luke Gallows, Carl Anderson. This later on leads to us finding Big Cass passed out on the floor with a whole bunch of staging stacked on top of him. He's clearly been attacked now. And it also should be mentioned that this is happening during the segment where Dean sneaks back in and you see the Revival in the background again. So that obviously is still an option. Enzo's freaking out because they have a match coming up next, and the referee says, well, I mean, maybe you should go find a replacement partner, because Big Cass clearly can't do anything. He can barely walk right now. So this leads up to that match where Enzo goes out to the ring. Turns out he's still got somebody who's over 7 foot tall. It's the Big Show. They have some fun doing the Enzo and Cass gimmick together. They end up running over Gallus and Anderson. I actually kind of like this, honestly.
You know, what is interesting is the fact that they did go with Kaz getting attacked. Mm-hmm. I was really enjoying this whole thought process of Kaz being that guy. You know, and not that I wanted it to be, but in a strange way, I kind of did. I liked the idea of Kaz pretending it wasn't him, and then down the line, we find that it really was him, and he's blaming everybody else. I think that would be a smart way to play off the beginning of a feud between Kaz and Enzo. But they're not going that way. They're going to do something else, and hey, it is what it is. So since we are going this direction, I still love the idea that Kaz is very, you know, paranoid and all that. And so I don't have a problem with it. I think that, you know, the match itself was kind of fun because you did have Big Show kind of play off the part of Kaz, but he didn't know how to do it. I love the fact that Enzo's like, that's not how we do it. That's not how we do it. You know what I mean? I love the fact that he was like telling Big Show that as he's, you know, being held up in the air and all that, but they still win the match. And yeah, the hokiest thing was, you know, you have Big Show pretending he's, you know, a New Yorker.
Right.
That's a little far off, you know, for me, or New Jersey, whatever you want to say it. So that's a little silly, but it is what it is, right? I did like the interaction between Enzo and Big Show, though, to an extent, though, as well, because the fact that you had Big Show being very serious and Enzo being like, come on, it's funny, come on. So the interaction was good. Match was what it is. We expected, you know, of course, they're not going to lose. You know, you're not going to have Big Show and, you know, Enzo lose. Once again, Paul, I mean, I think it. Very interesting. We still, no matter what it showed out there in the ring, Kaz is still speculative and very paranoid that the Big Show was the one attacking him. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, he has a point. I mean, he was awfully willing to help Enzo. It makes you wonder, but I don't think that's the case.
Right. After the match, Enzo and Big Show, run into Kaz backstage, and Kaz starts pointing the finger at Big Show, saying that it's awfully convenient for him to attack Kaz and then replace him in the match. And Big Show's like, dude, I'm a giant. I can't sneak around. Like, you're just an idiot. I really enjoyed that part too. If it is Cass, then they're going to have a little bit of explaining to do. But I mean, it still seems pretty apparent that this is going to turn out to be the Revival.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think you're right on that. And if it's not the Revival, it'll be another big shock reveal. But I really am believing after tonight, Kaz is kind of out of that picture of being a suspect. I mean, maybe they'll swerve us possibly, but I really feel like we've got to move on with that, you know.
Right, yeah. I mean, hopefully we'll get some clarity on where this is going next week. But if it is the Revival, I don't know how much longer Dash has to keep his jaw shut, so.
Yeah, I can't remember as well. I think they mentioned it, but it's just not in the memory bank.
Yeah, it's not there for me right now either. But let's talk about something that was here, and that's the women. The women were here, as Alexa Bliss is still your champion after Extreme Rules. Bayley is not here, however. They're selling the injuries there, even though it was like a 6-minute match and not a lot of kendo stick hitting, but whatever. Bayley's not here. So Alexa Bliss runs into Kurt Angle, and she says she showed up here for Kurt to sort of congratulate her, but she really wants to make it known that tonight she's going to celebrate her title win with another This Is Your Life segment about her, and Kurt says, no, you're not going to do that. That was one of the worst rated segments in Raw ever of all time, and instead, you promised Nia Jax a title shot, so why don't you go ahead and deliver on that tonight, and you'll face her for the championship. This has Alexa playing very scared, obviously, because Nia could probably eat her if she wanted to, and I mean that in the nicest way possible. So Alexa starts looking around for backup. She runs into Mickey James, Sasha Banks, and Dana Brooke in the locker room. Sasha just immediately runs away from her and doesn't want to hear what she has to say. She tries to sell Mickey and Alexa on the same idea of what's going on SmackDown and how Charlotte jumped the line. Well, now Nia's jumping the line. She didn't earn this. And they say they're only going to be down there to watch her get beat up because, you know, Bliss sort of dug her own grave. And that leads us to the match. It's very, very short, maybe 2.5 minutes. Nia dominates most of it. However, Alexa Bliss ends up rolling out to the floor and manages to coerce Mickey James and Dana Brooke into hitting her, which leads to a disqualification victory for her. She ends up running away after Nia tries to pursue, and instead Dana and Mickey get beat down in one of the most awkward segments I might have ever seen. So they're just sort of standing there in the ring watching Alexa go up the ramp, and then Nia just turns around, and they're waiting around for her to beat them up. It's very, very bad looking.
Very awful. I mean, I can't tell you how stupid that was. But anyway, I could focus on that too much. I do want to say before I get into this Alexa Bliss stuff, Paul, I mean, do you agree with me and Sean, worst match of the night with that whole kendo stick on the pole?
Yeah, by far. By far.
Yeah, it's awful. And what's so sad about this also, Paul, we talked about how bad that segment was last week's Raw. This is just not going well for Bayley at all. I feel terrible for her. I don't blame her all for that. That's a lot of the writing. It's a lot of what they're deciding to do. I think Bayley does need to take some ownership in finding ways to get more over. But, you know, once again, she's probably going to stand up for herself with those writers to get in a better place. But who knows? But, you know, let's focus on some of the better things, I guess you can say. They really did feature Alexa Bliss on this Raw, despite the fact that, you know, not the greatest match in that pay-per-view. I think what they were doing here was kind of smart. I love the jokes about themselves saying how bad that segment was last week. I think that was perfect. Poking fun at themselves in a way, I think. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you do have a lot of common sense here, right? I mean, they didn't just have, you know, oh, no, Nia Jax, oh, that's, let's sort of forget about that. No, that's still in the memory bank. They still use this. I love the way that, you know, you do have Alexa Bliss trying to con other people to get involved. That's, once again, something else. It's common sense. Only makes sense for somebody who's so small going up against a bigger person, as in Nia Jax is. So it all kind of backfires on Alexa Bliss, but she's so smart. And she knows how to play her cards right. And she ends up getting those same people who thought that they were going to watch her lose to basically help her win. And, I mean, my God, how smart can you be? So this is all leading to Alexa Bliss looking very intelligent, being a very very big con artist and very big manipulator of people. Just really, really great. I mean, it's kind of weird to say this, but she's kind of, in a way, the most cerebral we've seen in a while in the women's division, and I really, really like that, and I think it makes sense, and it needs to be a part of her repertoire because she is so small. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's hard for us to believe, oh my God, how is she beating all these ladies? I mean, they're so much taller than her, but with her intelligence and the way she's doing things, it all makes sense. So very happy with the way this worked out. The best way for her to have a match with Nia Jax and not really lose. But that last part was just god awful. Never do that again. Mickey James would not just stand there. I mean, I'll give you Dana Brooke because she may be that silly just to stand there. But it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it looked awful. I will say that this episode of Raw, as far as the women went, was all about trying to rehab Alexa from last week's gaffe in the match on Sunday. And I think they did a good job of that. She's sort of right back where she was. She's dominant by not being the toughest girl in the room, but certainly being the smartest. And I think that works out very well for her.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I mean, and they needed to do that. They really needed to continue doing now more interesting and more productive things for this division outside of just her now, because they're not really strong on this division, apparently. They apparently week in and week out are not doing what they need to do to get that over, because it's usually the weakest part of Raw, and that's not good. The cruiserweights are sometimes outdoing the women's division.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go ahead with that segue. Let's talk about the cruiserweights, because TJP and Neville run into each other backstage. TJP wants his title match now that the Austin Aries problem has been taken care of, and he brings up everything that he did for Neville. And Neville agrees with him. He says, you know what, you're right. You take care of Mustafa Ali tonight, and then I'll go talk to Angle about us having a title match. So that brings us right into the match here. TJP takes on Mustafa Ali. They go about 2.5 minutes. TJP takes out Mustafa Ali's knee and then hits him with the detonation kick. I'm okay, kind of, with this in a way, because TJP really did need a strong win. Especially if he is going to be challenging for the championship. But you have other guys, I think, that are better for this, because Mustafa Ali is embroiled in that feud with Drew Gulak. I think it's important to make sure he keeps looking strong and all that stuff. And I understand maybe they wanted a name, if you are watching 205 Live, to make sure that TJP looks good here. But I feel like this was maybe the wrong person to do that with.
You know, it probably is, and as soon as I heard the name Mustafa Ali, I thought, why are they doing this to him? Because you know there's no way TJP is going to lose, mm-hmm. especially with that stipulation of, oh, you win this match, and I guess what I thought to Kurt Angle. I think the only really thing that could really kind of mix together on this and actually transfer over to 205 is Gulak saying, look what happened. You were being, you know, a high flyer, and you were doing all these aerial moves, and you were trying once again to do it, and it cost you the loss last night on Raw. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why you need to listen to me. I think that that's one thing you can take out of that if you're going to take anything out of it. But maybe it's the name. Maybe it's also for the fact that they still want to have some good matches and probably their best cruiserweights involved on that show, you know, when it comes to Raw. Makes sense in that point, but you're right. I think TJP really should have probably beat somebody else. I kind of like the way that this whole thing has kind of progressed for TJP, even though he's not really, to me, the right competitor for Neville, because I just see Neville just going right through him. I just don't – it's not believable for me at all. But, I mean, it is what it is, and you got to have sometimes those champions face off against guys that, you know – they just can run through and beat to the next guy. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens with that. But Neville looks coming out looking good in this one too. I love the manipulation at that, using that whole thought process of, I got some really terrible news for you. And
yeah.
TJP thinks, oh no, I didn't get the match. No, you got it. The unfortunate news is I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. Neville ends up meeting TJP at the top of the ramp and ends up attacking him, where he reveals that their title match is going to be tomorrow on 205 Live. I'm sure the match is going to be great, but you said it, Gary. Like, there's not a ton of believability in the fact that TJP has a shot in hell of winning this and walking away with the championship. Not because, you know, he's not a bad wrestler or anything. It's just he's been the whipping boy for so long. He hasn't really gotten a chance to look super strong going through all this. And now that he's going to go one-on-one with Neville for the belt. Like, I mean, the match is probably going to be good. I just... he's not going to win the title, you know.
And it's so interesting because TJP really is, you know, like you said, you're right, a great wrestler. The one thing that's hard for us to believe is the fact that Neville has beaten Austin Aries, all these other great, super awesome talents. It's just TJP is really not on that level, and how are we going to believe it? We're not. And so I look at right now at Neville and say, who can beat him? Who will beat him? It's so hard to think of who can do it. And once that person does come around, they're going to be getting a huge push because of the fact that, you know, that rub is going to be so big. It's got to matter. You know, that's got to lead to a big push for another superstar. So I wonder who it's going to be. And not only that, I also question, is it somebody that's already on the cruiserweight division, or is it someone they're going to add in? Because I don't. Honestly, I can't think of anybody that's going to beat Neville. Not off the top of my head.
Well, I would say Akira Tozawa, but this episode of Raw might lead you to think he could be bound elsewhere, because he might be getting tied up in this whole Titus Brand fiasco. As apparently there was a segment earlier where Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews run into Tozawa and tell him to watch tonight, because whenever you see how good Titus is in the ring, you're going to want to join the brand. And Titus has a match with Kalisto, seeing as Kalisto managed to beat Apollo the night before after some arguing between the two. And O'Neil does control a good portion of this 90-second match, but Kalisto ends up sneaking out another win after, despite going for what won him the match the night before, ends up one-upping Titus because Titus goes to pull the tights after he gets a pinfall. Kalisto flips out of it and holds his tights to get the actual victory and then runs off. So I don't know what exactly Tozawa was going to be doing going forward, but if you're getting tied up in this, maybe they're going to pull him out of the cruiserweight division. Maybe they see something more for him. I don't know.
That's my question too, Paul. And I could see that in a way, because he's a guy that has really gotten over in a really quick fashion. You know, I get it. I mean, the ha 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 thing really does it for the crowd. But, you know, his moveset, a lot of the things this guy does really wins people over, and he doesn't even have to talk. I mean, it's really funny, but he just doesn't have to say anything, and he can just get the crowd going behind him. So I think maybe Vince sees that and maybe wants to use him in other fashions besides just the cruiserweight division. Maybe they even pull him out, like you're saying. Who knows? The Titus Brand thing is really an interesting leeway for him to be involved in other things besides the cruiserweights, but hey, I'll take it. To me, this all leads up to really Tozawa and Kalisto tagging up against, you know, Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil. Right, for right now, you know, until they do go further in the storyline. But I totally see that. Kind of like, honestly, what I see with the women's division, right? You got Nia Jax, and even though she's not really happy with Alexa Bliss, I could see her tagging up against Mickey James and, you know, Dana Brooke. So I think that that's all leading to maybe some other things, and then that'll all break down from here. But I'm happy for Tozawa if he is going to get a chance to break out and do some other things.
Yeah, me too. And if this ends up, like, him and Apollo Crews are big friends from when they were both in Dragon Gate together. Samurai del Sol also sort of in that same area as well. So that big connection might lead to those guys being put together in some sort of tag team, any combination of the three. So I would be down for that for sure. Speaking of tag teams, though, Cesaro and Sheamus shocked the heck out of me by winning that cage match and becoming your new Raw Tag Team Champions. They squash Heath Slater and Rhino, and then they get to cut a promo running down the Hardys and claiming that they are the bar as far as tag team wrestling goes now. I didn't think they were going to move the belts off the Hardys, but the only other team that you could do it with on Raw is Cesaro and Sheamus, and I got no problem with that. They're a great team, they're great wrestlers, and I love them both to pieces.
You know, I may not be a huge fan or even, you know, definitely not of Sheamus like you are, but I still like the guy, just I don't think I love him as much. I am a huge Cesaro guy. I think that these guys do work well together, and I think, honestly, in this promo, they both really worked out great together, too, on the mic. I mean, for me personally, I think they showcased themselves in a very good fashion on this show, especially after having that big win against the Hardys the night before. So I think this makes sense. I think that their verbiage was good. I don't think that they really wasted us on anything. Happy with it. I want to see where they go from here, and I think they look strong as your tag champs.
Mm-hmm. And last but certainly not least, Goldust and R-Truth get some dueling promos in the movie style that they've been doing and throw around some movie quotes, and they're both intent on beating the bejesus out of each other at some point. I'm loving old school Goldust. It's taking me right back to when I first got into wrestling, and watching Truth get some time to go out here and try to establish a feud is good too, because I've liked R-Truth many, many years throughout his career. So looking forward to when these two hook up.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Goldust is Goldust, right? He's great. I mean, you really just enjoy that character because of what he does. And It's classic. Now, you know, R-Truth, he's a little different because of the fact that we've seen him in different scenarios, different kind of ways to use his character. And I kind of like this thing that they're going with him where he's kind of stealing a little bit of the director's chair. He's kind of stealing away from Shaft and some of the black exploitation stuff. Mm-hmm. And also the Pulp Fiction references he makes. I'm just die every time I hear it because I love Pulp Fiction. So I'm just dying of love and joy because I'm getting to hear Pulp Fiction from R-Truth. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, I mean, I think this is very interesting, despite the fact that these guys don't show up and interact on the mic. I mean, they just do it on these videos and get their word out and make you actually kind of get excited just by doing that alone. And no problem here for me. I'm enjoying both of them.
Can't agree with you more, Gary. So there's really not a whole lot left for us to do, but to put a number on this thing, Gary. So what you rating the show?
You know, this show wasn't actually too bad. I think for a post pay-per-view show, they really gave you a lot of good direction. You got some good matches out of it. I think for the most part, everybody that came out of that pay-per-view when it comes to being new champions or just retaining, they all felt very important. They all had a point. I mean, you like we talked about Alexa Bliss's match, not very good, but hey, the fact that they gave her a lot of good common sense in her storyline tonight and really pushed her in a direction that made a lot of sense. You also had, you know, this whole Samoa Joe thing really work out well. I just very happy about all that. I'm gonna go ahead and give it a 7.5. I was really happy with the way this all worked out. And, you know, some things were kind of slow, but for the most part, good direction for most.
Yeah, for sure. I'm interested in a lot of things that are actually going on Raw right now, which I didn't think I really would be at this point, but the main event still feels fresh. They completely made Samoa Joe into a bona fide main eventer who looks absolutely threatening across two shows, which, you know, props to them for that. Excuse me. The Miz and Dean Ambrose was there. That's another interesting feud that I got a lot of enjoyment out of. Enzo and Cass's thing. I mean, who doesn't love it? It's a classic whodunit, essentially, at this point. And then you have everything else going on, too. They rehabbed Alexa Bliss pretty well tonight. I don't think I liked it as much as 7.5, but maybe I'd be willing to go 7 for sure. The opener and the main event were really good matches, too. So if you're looking for wrestling, definitely go check those two out.
Yeah.
But that's going to do it for Raw, I think, Gary.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, you know, if you want to give your early predictions on who you do think that attacked Kaz, and maybe you don't think it's the Revival, maybe, who knows, maybe it is the Big Show with the, you know, a wrench in the library. You know, if you have any other ideas, make sure you let us know. And the way to do that is to go ahead and find, like, you can even do it on this episode alone. Make a comment on W2Mnet.com. You can find this podcast on there. Make a comment. Hey, if you're listening on YouTube, just make your comment there as well. Anywhere you're listening, hey, make sure you hit us up. We want to see your comments, everything you think. We love reading it, and we love getting some feedback. Also, we love it when you rate and review us as well. I mean, that really does a lot for us. It kind of helps more people see our product and kind of gets out the podcast so everybody can have a bigger voice when it comes to the world of wrestling, because it's just, man, it's what this is all about, just a community. Also, don't forget, you can go find all our other great reviews at Wrestling to the Max. Go subscribe. Also, you know, if you want to go check out everything at W2Mnet.com, or maybe you just want to hear in the audio form, go check out the W2M Network. A lot of great content coming your way, especially on this first episode of Wrestling to the Max. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff this week on the part one, episode 250. A lot of cool stuff, and you're just not going to want to miss a minute of the action. Besides that, we are done. Thanks for listening, and we will see you guys down the road.
Have a good one, guys.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.